So let's say tonight is number 7 and Avos part 4, just to make sure that we're up to scratch.
You are bookmarked.
I'm bookmarked in your thing. And we have been... part 4 on Avos then. Okay, yeah, that makes sense if it's 7. Okay, that's good. So it's Avos part 4.
Baruch.
Okay. So what we've got, what we've done so far is we did two for the introduction, and then we did standing and bowing, and then we've done Hashem Sifasai Tiftoch, which is the introductory pasuk, and now we are 4. This is the 4th level into the first brocha, which is Avos. And we've been discussing a lot. We've been talking about the word Baruch, what it means, Lashon Berecha. We talked about Atah being in first person singular, that we're developing an individual relationship with Hashem. We talked about Hashem Elokeinu, the differences between Hashem being Yudkei Vavkei, which is Shemavaya, versus Elokeinu, which is a master of powers. We talked about Velekei Avasenu, why it is we've got to bring in the concept of our forefathers. And then last week, especially, we spoke about Elokei Avraham, Elokei Yitzhak, Velekei Yaakov. Why specifically we then have to mention each of the three others? If we've just said he's the God of our forefathers, why don't we need to go and spell it out? We know who the forefathers are. What are we learning out from each one? And each one had their own unique, specific way of getting close to Hashem. And each one we try to emulate because they all have an individual channel for us that we can follow as their descendants. Now Hashem indeed expects us to follow those ways to get through to him. We talked about how Hashem criticized Moshe Rabbeinu for not living up to the level of the Avos by questioning him when he didn't understand what Pharaoh was doing, when he upped the ante on the work, on the slave labor, and Hashem was upset with him and said, "With the Avos, they didn't question me like that, but you do. I expect you to be able to behave like the Avos, because now that Avos have set the tone, that's the way Yiddishkeit's going to be." We discussed that. And today, Be'ezus Hashem, we're now going to go into the words HaKael, HaGodl, HaGibor, VaHanoira, Kael Elyon. Then the next phrase, Goimel Chasadim Tovim, VaKainei HaKael. So we're starting off with the great, the mighty, and the awesome God, the supreme God, who bestows beneficial kindness and creates everything. This is really a mega, mega line. We've really got it. This really should focus us. If everything's a preamble talking about who we should be, now we're cutting to the chase. Because we're talking about Hashem himself. We're mentioning Hashem himself in the Shemona Esrei. And we're starting to break down different elements of ways to gain access to Hashem. So I want to just jump straight in with some basic frontline kavana, basic frontline intentions that one can have when saying these words. Now, so we've just said, if we take it in English, remember, Baruch is not blessed. It's a source of blessing. It's an increase, ribui, expansion, greatness. We realize Hashem's the one giving us everything. We've said he's the God of our forefathers. We're part of a 3,700-year tradition. And then we start talking to him directly, praising him. Remember, these are the first three vertebrae which don't have ribs. They don't protect the body. Therefore, they're pure praise, as we discussed from the Maharal. There's three ribs, which are the first three brochas and the last three brochas, which don't have, three vertebrae and three vertebrae, that's six vertebrae, which don't have ribs. The 13 vertebrae do have ribs. Those are the central brochas, which we're going to start at brocha number 4, going all the way through to brocha number 13. Then we've got the last three, which are praise again. So it's praise times 3. Then we've got 13 asking requests, which are the ribs. They protect Klal Yisrael, they protect the body. Then we're going to finish off with 3 of praise. Now we're really going to start to praise Hashem. Here we go. The first word of praise of Hashem is HaKael, the Almighty. Now, what's really amazing to understand from the Ari HaKadosh, which is the Arizal, which is the font of Kabbalistic wisdom in Sfas, is this is one of the highest names of Hashem. One of the highest names of Hashem. It is boundless loving kindness, more so than Yudkei Vavkei. Yudkei Vavkei, the tetragrammaton, which we do not say, is a name which denotes Hashem's judgment tinted with mercy, tinted with loving kindness, which gives a merciful outcome. Yudkei, the first two letters of his name, is very intense judgmentalism. With Vavkei mixed together, it becomes a name that is merciful. It also is the name that is denoted with Hashem fulfilling his promises. Once Hashem makes a promise to you, then you fulfill it, then you understand him as Yudkei Vavkei, which are the words Chaya Haive V'Yihyeh. He was, he is, and he will be. He's infinite. He has control over that. And that's Yudkei Vavkei. That's the name Hashem that we refer to when we say Hashem, the name. But HaKael, the Almighty, means that it is literally boundless loving kindness, which is ruleless. He just wishes to bestow his intense loving kindness, can, and nothing can stop him. This is super duper loving kindness. I use the term super duper there. It's just boundless loving kindness. Why? Because he's almighty. There's just nothing really that can stop him once he wants to do something. Once he decides it's going to do, there's nothing that stops him. So if he decides I'm going to shower you in blessing, it doesn't matter whether you're deserving or not. And that's the name Kale. That's the name Aleph and Lamed. So we say he's almighty. And then we say he's Hagadol. He's great. Now, we talked about this concept, how the Gentiles see that Hashem is great, which means he's very, very lofty. And they say, if he was so lofty, he wouldn't have anything to do with us. And then we say Hagibor, he's powerful. He has Gvura, he has might. He's able to express what he wants into all worlds, especially the physical world, which affects us directly. And then finally, Noira. I just have to translate Noira as awesome. And we have to understand the word awesome. I looked on the emotion wheel, which talks about all the different emotions. How do you define the word awesome? Or is the emotion which is experienced between terror and amazement? A mixture of just overpowering fear and surprise and amazement, tremendous amazement, mixed somewhere in the middle of those two extremes is what we call awe. Being in awe, which is a relatively rare thing, is where you are both scared and amazed at the same time. Maybe if you've ever gone to a place which doesn't have a lot of light pollution and you look up, like maybe in the lakes or in Scotland where there's really no light there at all, and you see hundreds of millions of stars. In such a place, you may experience the concept of awe. You would just look up and see there's just, sometimes you can see the band of the Milky Way going through. It's just too much. Clearly, these stars, which are bigger than the Earth, bigger than our sun, and the sun dwarfs our Earth, it's just such an awesome event. When you look up and you see that, there's amazement, and there's also surprise, and there's a bit of fear. Like, who is making all that? That's the concept. So we build up and build up and build up. Hakel Hagod Lagibor. Then we say Vahanoira. Then we say awesome. And then we cap that with Kael Elyon, the supreme existence, the ultimate being, the supreme God. Now, we're going to have to talk about what's the difference between Kael Elyon and the word Kael. If it starts off with HaKael, HaGodl HaGibor V'Anoira, why don't you Kael Elyon? Or just say Kael Elyon to start with. Knock the word Kael out from the beginning. Say HaGodl HaGibor V'Anoira Kael Elyon. Why do I need two experiences of the word Kael there? And then we say Kael Elyon, the supreme existence. The ultimate existence that can be, he is.
Which suggests that the first Kael wasn't enough.
No, we'll get there. So he's building and building and building and building. And we would have thought, now that we've got this far, really we should start talking about HaKadosh Baruch Hu. As we talked about, I think, two sessions ago, when the Gentiles see that Hashem is so great, they automatically assume that if they were that great, they wouldn't have anything to do with the lowly boss of Adam that we are. They wouldn't have anything to do with flesh and blood. The riffraff, you know what I mean? The next words are Goimel Chasadin Tovin. He is intimately involved in bestowing beneficent loving kindness. Now, why do we need chasodim toivim? Chasodim is acts of loving kindness. Why do we need the word good after that? Chasodim toivim? Find me a bad chesed. I've done your chesed. Oh, that was a bad one.
Giving your kids too many sweets.
That's bad chesed. That's not a chesed at all. This is the concept. If I'm going to do chasodim, I'm looking to do a chesed in the best possible way. First of all, you need the medicine. You need the medicine. I'm going to have to give you the medicine, but I'm going to sugarcoat it. On top of the fact that you need the medicine, I'm going to make it as palatable and as good for you as possible. You require the healing, I'll give you the healing, and it'll be a smooth, easy healing. That's chasodim tovim, which means he is very, very involved with what's going on in your life on a day-to-day practical basis. That's notwithstanding the fact of everything we previously said. He's still the universe maker. He's still the galaxy spinner. Andromeda, which is our nearest galaxy, he spins like a kid spins a dreidel. That's no problem for him. But with such an awesome, mighty being, why would he care about what's going on in the intimate details of my life? You know, what's going on with my buttons and my car. He cares. He cares about all of these individual things. So what I'm going to do now is go through these concepts. So let's talk about the word Hakael. the Almighty. What's going on with the word Hakael? So we understand the word Hakael as the master and source of all powers. Then we refer to him as Godel, great, big. Now this refers to Hashem's essence, which is infinite, and strong, Gibor, refers to his actions, if you want to make a note. This is one approach. While awesome relates to our appreciation and comprehension of him. As much as we can understand of him, we just see him as awesome, which means he both amazes and terrifies us in his just incredible superiority.
Sorry, but what was lofty?
What?
You said that might was action. What did you say lofty was?
Godel. So if you turn Godel, great refers to Hashem's essence, which is infinite. Strong refers to his actions. And awesome refers to our perception and comprehension of him. But the Ian Tefillah says differently. The Ian Tefillah says differently. He says Godel refers specifically to creation. This is something you should have in mind when you say HaGodel. When God's greatness was displayed as the creator, he was above and beyond his creation. Gibor, strength, refers to the Exodus from Egypt, where we saw God's strength in releasing the Jewish people from bondage. And Neira, awesome, specifically refers to Kriyas Yamsuf, the splitting of the Red Sea, where God's supernatural control was openly revealed to the whole world. It wasn't just the splitting of the Yamsuf, it was a splitting of all bodies of water. And it wasn't splitting, it was tunnel making. It did not split in half. The top was still there. There were tunnels that were made in the shape of a rainbow that curved because they entered on the same side of the shore and they exited on the same side of the shore, but just in a more northerly place. So if you were sitting in a bath in India, the water would split into a multi-rainbowed tunnel system everywhere because God changed the nature of water. It actually makes more sense if it's a top-down change. If he just changed water coming down, all water changes. So the forces which are in charge of water changed entirely. That's why all water split. That's actually a more natural way of doing it than just splitting one body of water, which is what happened when they crossed the River Jordan later. Only the Jordan split. I want to argue that's possibly a bigger nais in a certain way, because how come it's just that body of water and not everything? He just basically changed the chemical analysis of water. That's why when Moshe crossed Yam Suf, Hashem then turned around to him and said, now put it back. Because you've got to put it back. I didn't create water to bend like this. I had to change the molecular structure of dihydrogen oxide to actually bend in order to make it go wiggly like that. That's not the way I want water. I want water the normal way we have it. So go and put it back. Because putting it back is better than it is going through this miraculous state, which was only happening now for this time, for this particular revelation that I want. But now I want it back as normal, how I originally created it. So Moshe Rabbeinu had to do a second nace and put it back the way it originally was. Which means he just basically turned upstairs, or basically he was at work, turned the water back to where it was originally designed. Okay, so that's Godel, Gibor, and Neira. So we said there that Godel is creation, Gibor is Exodus, and Neira is Yam Suf. But a deeper understanding of this interpretation is that Godel refers to Hashem's attribute of chesed, of loving kindness, which is without limitation. This particular middah, which is what we've been talking about, the whole of last session basically, was of course Avram Avinu. That's where he excelled. And it's with that attribute that God created the world and made it available to everybody without discrimination or limitation. It's just Godel. It's just great big chesed. Everyone that's in it, take, because I'm giving out. That's his gadlus. His gadlus, his greatness, is his chesed giving manifestation, his ability to give chesed. So this chesed represents Hashem's initial motivation in creation, and that's to shower his infinite goodness on creation, and that was similar enough to him that he could receive this goodness. So what was that again? He wants to shower his goodness on creation, and that gives us the ability to start mimicking him like Avram Avinu in order to be able to try to get close to him in also showing chesed to others. And that mimicked Hashem. However, since infinite goodness would not be appreciated and truly enjoyed unless it was earned and deserved, Hashem held back that goodness from the physical world. Now, for those that have done Derech Hashem with me, or those that are listening to the Derech Hashem system, this is a very, very key point in the beginning of Derech Hashem. When Hashem created the universe, He knew that the creations that He's going to make are going to feel uncomfortable if they get a dole out or a handout from Hashem. Hashem just says, look, just take this and enjoy it. That's one thing. The bread of shame. Very good. That's right. Nahamadu Kasufa. Very good. But man would enjoy the beneficent giving of Hashem if he feels as if he had a right to it. I have done an action. I have earned my place to get this. And therefore, the good that I'm receiving, I feel as if I myself have done work to achieve. And the feeling that you get when you get paid to do something and then you get paid for it is much more than you doing a voluntary act and someone gives you a tip. If you say, look, I've done the work, and if I didn't do the work, I'd have a claim against you, is very, very different to doing a voluntary work. Hashem doesn't want you to feel as if you voluntarily just got, I don't know, some chesed. He wants to feel as if you really worked for it and you really got it, because that feeling is a better feeling. So what he has to do is hold back that good. He has to pull back on just constantly giving. And that pulling back is gevura. That is gibor. Hashem's gevura is the strength to limit and restrain his goodness until you've deserved it. And that, of course, is who, which of the avos does that link to? Who is the one that personified restraint and control? Yitzhak Avinu. Excellent. Yitzhak Avinu was the individual who most embodied that power of restraint reflected by his fear of Hashem. So we need gevura, we need to hold back, we need to be able to put things in place. And that gibor, it means that he's tempering that gadlus, that giving out, in just the right amount, which is perfect for the world. Now, gevura relates to avoida as well, which is divine service. And that means a total subjugation of material things to that service. And Yitzhak Avinu, more than any other, showed us what that meant. Now, gevura also refers to Yetziat Mitzrayim, where God differentiated between the Egyptians and the Jews. You know, it's an amazing thing. When the plagues happened in Mitzrayim, a tremendous nisim happened at that time, where the hail or the locusts or whatever was, the lice, literally would form a boundary between the Jewish and Gentile properties, because they were not allowed to attack the Jews. So if there were ever any property arguments saying my property ends here, your property ends here, they were solved by the nisim, by these makas. Because people knew that the lice would literally follow the legal boundary of Jewish ownership and say, look, we can't hit the Egyptians. So if the Egyptian actually, I own an extra 3 feet into your garage, and the lice would go all the way 3 feet into his garage, you know that really, the, you know, where the Egyptian was end, and we knew that. But that just, the dogs also didn't wet their tongue. They didn't bark at the Jews, which is an incredible nice, because it's natural for dogs to bark. And they held themselves back. All this was an act of gevura. Holding back and making sure you know the exact delineated border between one thing and another is an expression of gevura, of restraint. So in Yetziat Mitzrayim, Hashem, when we say gibor, we're actually meant to be thinking about some of the power that was shown in the makas, in the actual plagues, to show how Kodesh Baruch Hu organized everything absolutely perfectly. Even when it came to Makas Bechoris, when he killed the firstborn, he knew who was the firstborn of who. Sometimes there were 3 or 4 firstborns in the family. And nobody else knew about that. At least they certainly didn't want to tell anyone about that. But HaKadosh Baruch Hu knew. Only he knew with pinpoint, absolute laser-like accuracy exactly what's going on. That's gevura. That kind of level of focused in, that's gevura. Noira. Noira. This awe which is found between terror and amazement. We call him HaNoira, the awesome. This is the synthesis, the joining of God's unlimited goodness and his restraint together, so it's the product of Godel and Gibor, that results in a world that will be the world to come, where the reward for one's restraint that you exercised in this world will be given to you. So Noira, his awesomeness in this understanding, is the outcome of Godel and Gibor. God's always giving out, but yet he restrains it. When you put that two together, that synthesis, that balance, that harmony between love and stringency, that comes out with a perfect balance that then we perceive as awesome. Which individual was the balance between loving kindness and restraint? Yaakov Avinu. He was sometimes addressed by Hashem as, Yaakov was addressed by Hashem as, I'm the God of your forefather Avraham, I'm the God of your forefather Yitzhak. Hashem could interface with Yaakov, both from a side of restraint and from a side of loving kindness, because he mastered both. And that's what makes him the greatest of the Avos in that sense. He himself is attached to the concept of Yaakov, which is Titen Emes Yaakov. He granted truth to Yaakov, which is Tyra, which guides and directs one to bind the physical and spiritual together. The job of a Jew is not to divorce himself from the physical. The job of the Jew is not to live under a waterfall, meditating, only wearing a toga and being given out bowls of rice by people. That's not the job of a Jew. The job of a Jew is to enjoy the physical world, use the physical world, but elevate it. We've got to bind spirituality with physicality. And that's Neira. If it works well, that's Neira. That is truly awesome. Neira also, as we said earlier, refers to Kriyas Yam Suf, since at the sea, God removed the restrictions of the physical world and exhibited a salvation inherent in those restraints. So God's existence became known from both saving the Jews and drowning the Egyptians. So he did one. He did both things at the sea, by the way. Do you know, recently they found all the fossils of the Egyptians and the chariots on Yam Suf, and they came out. Have you heard about this? They found bones of people in chariots and horse skeletons. Amazing. Now, what's going on? Two things are happening at Kriyas Yam Suf. One is he's redeeming the Jews, which is a big deal. And two is he's also punishing the Egyptians, measure for measure. Just like they threw the Jewish babies in the water, they themselves were drowned. And it's all happening in the same foul stroke. You know that the Baal Shem Tov HaKodesh, the Besh, the originator of the Hasidic movement, said, how's God going to reward the righteous and punish the wicked? And he says, with the same thing, all he's going to do is reveal more of himself. That's it. You just turn up the lights. How's that going to work? If you're righteous, you're going to love that. More Hashem is great. If you feel really uncomfortable and really like, God, don't like this God stuff, it's all spiritual, don't like any of that, and you try to shy away from anything spiritual, when he reveals more of himself, you're going to feel horrible. You're going to feel like, I don't like this. That's exactly how he's going to punish the wicked and reward the good in the same manner. Same thing with Kriyas Yam Suf. He does the same thing. He's going to be doing things with water. Some people are going to drown. Some people are going to be saved. But it's all in the same sea happening at the same time. They were walking around and from Shevet Dan at the back, as it were, right behind them, the waters were closing in and drowning the Egyptians at the same time as he was saving the rest of the Jews. It was all happening simultaneously. This is an expression of God's awesomeness. That's when Yisrael heard that, by the way, he converted. It was specifically Kriyas Yam Suf, how it was working, how it was that when the Egyptians would throw the Jewish babies into the water and to drown them, that Hashem was doing exactly the same thing and yet saving at the same time. He said, that's it. I got to join. This is it. This is the real God. I've been looking all of his life. He was the Pope. And he was trying every single religion. He became the high priest of Midian, which is the Pope, which is the high. He was the number one advisor to Pharaoh. He's like a bishop. You know, we always put the bishop next to the king. You have always the Pope keep him close. And he ran away looking for God. Finally, he found the truth. And he said, this is it. The thing which more than anything else is God's awesomeness expressed at Kriyas Yam Suf. This is the kind of power of the God that we're talking about. And he's so exacting. And the individuals who were not as bad, Rishoyim, they weren't as wicked. They drowned quickly. And those that were wicked, they were knocked around like straw knocking about on the top. God was pummeling them. Exactly measure for measure. So if he was a really bad guy, he'd be floating about the top being hidden by the waves. And if he was not such a bad guy, he'd drown very, very quickly. Each one got their punishment. And all the Jews in the meantime were picking fresh fruit and drinking fresh water in the middle of the sea. Trees came up with ripe fruits ready to go. It's just awesome control of the universe. This, in and of itself, is worth turning up for tonight. We've probably all heard of the Anshei Knesses HaGadoila, the men of the Great Assembly, who are around in about approximately 350 CE, during the close of Baal Sheni, before the Romans destroyed the Beis HaMikdash. The men of the Great Assembly. Why are they called the Anshei Knesses HaGadoila? The Anshei, the men, Knesses of the Assembly, HaGadoila, that was great. Well, that just means there was a lot of them. Is that why they called that? The Gemara in Yuma, Samach Tes, Amud Beis, that's 69b, says that Anshei Knesset HaGadolah was so called, it's cryptic this, we got to talk about it, because they returned the crown to its original status. And because of that, they're called Anshei Knesset HaGadolah. I think, as you can hear, that's going to need a little bit of explanation. But you're not going to believe, this is actually going to link directly to the Shemona Esrei. In fact, we call it that because of the words in the Shemona Esrei. This is just unbelievable. When you're going to say these words, you can think of Anshei Knesset HaGadolah. It's just incredible. Moshe Rabbeinu in Devarim, in Parshas Akev, in Yud Zayin, that's 10:17, describes Hashem. He himself says he praises Hashem as HaGadol, HaGibor, VaNoira. In Parshas Akev, it's Moshe that says these words. That's Deuteronomy 10:17. That's where we get it from. He's the one that praised God like that. Now, later, centuries later, when Nebuchadnezzar destroyed the first Beis HaMikdash, Jeremiah, Yirmiyahu cried out. And he said in chapter 32:18, the Gentiles desecrate his sanctuary without restraint. And indeed they did. If you want to learn out on Tisha B'Av, my goodness, what they only did. That was horrendous. Absolutely horrendous what they tried to do to defile the place. Where is God's awesomeness? Says Yirmiyahu. Where's his awesomeness? So he deleted the word Noira from our prayers. So we don't say Hakel HaGadol HaGibor VaNoira. Just said Hakel HaGadol VaGibor. And we don't say Noira. He said we can't do that.
So who did that?
Yirmiyahu. 32:18. Since the Goyim had defiled the Beis HaMikdash by reveling inside of it, God's awesomeness was no longer available to the world to see. So he felt as if he had to take that word out. Later, when Daniel, the prophet Daniel, in chapter 9, verse 4, saw the Gentiles oppressing the Jewish exiles in Babylon, he explained and said, where's God's might? Where's his gibor? So he took gibor out the prayer. We're shedding words fast here. We're shedding words. The prophet's come along and saying, no, you can't say it. I'm sorry. It doesn't fit anymore. It's so terrible. We can't call a Kodesh Baruch Hu these words anymore. So Moshe Rabbeinu comes along and calls him, right? What does he say? He calls him HaGadol HaGibor VaNoira. HaGadol HaGibor VaNoira. And along comes Yirmiyahu and he deleted the word Noira. Strike the last word. He's not awesome anymore because you won't believe how terrible things are getting here. Then Daniel comes along and says, we don't see his might. The Jews are being crushed. We don't see his might standing up for the Jews. He took off the word Gibor. So we're left with HaKel HaGadol. The Anshei Knesset HaGadolah put it back. Both of them. They said, sorry. They said to the prophet, you've misread it. What's going on? Oh, this is unbelievable. It's unbelievable. You've got to hear this. These are prophets. It's Jeremiah and Daniel. I mean, for goodness sake, these are some of the biggest prophets ever. And they took out these words and said, it's just so terrible. We can't praise Hashem like that. The Anshei Knesset HaGadolah put it all back. Why? They said, you've got to view it differently. The Anshei Knesset HaGadolah said, Hashem's strength, his gevurah, his gibor that Daniel took out, is his ability, hear this, his ability to restrain his anger and be patient with the wicked. Last night, I was giving a shiur for a kollel. We were talking about Hashem's love, and they were talking about how there's no way Hashem loves the wicked. And I said, really? And they said, yeah, Hashem loves the wicked. I've got to tell you this. Now, this is how I don't want to stir any pots here, but I just want to say something. I told you last week that Hitler, Yimach Shemai, killed 136 members of my mother's family. I've gone through that stat with you. We've worked out from my mother's family alone, 136 members were murdered by him, right? Okay. So let's say one morning he's busy killing my family, which I do not forgive him for. I publicly say I do not forgive him for that. And he sat down for breakfast. Bowl of cornflakes, sugar and a spoon. Fresh, full fat milk. And he sits there and he eats it and he crunches it and the sugar goes onto his tongue and the corn goes onto his tongue and the milk is cool and fresh. You know why? Because Hashem loves him. He doesn't love the evil he's doing. That not. But he is nonetheless showing love to him. He's looking after all the hairs on his arm. And he's making sure there's just enough wetness and moisture in his eyes. Hashem is very patient with the wicked, hoping they'll do tshuva. Bilam, he'll make a donkey speak if necessary. Efsha, maybe he'll come back to me. At the end of the day, they're all creations of Hashem. The wicked that people do, that is to be loathed. But we're not meant to hate people on personal grounds. And that's a vidu we have to clap for. If someone does you something wrong, it's the wickedness they did which you hate, but not them personally. Tzelem Elokim, it's an image of Hashem. If an individual is killed by court, you've got to hang them afterwards. We do it just for a moment, just before Shkia, put them up and take them down. Because Chos Hashanah, people walk by and sees it with the image, the holy image of a body is so Kaddish. People might look at that and mistake that for a divine being and think, Chos Hashanah, we're allowed to slaughter divine beings. This guy's a murderer. This guy got killed by court. He's not a good Nick. We treat the people with respect. Their actions, not so. We don't hate people on personal grounds. We hate what they do. You got a wicked bloke. He's doing wickedness, but he himself, you don't loathe.
So it's like we love God's creation.
That's it. Now, if they're doing wickedness, we loathe the wickedness. Yeah. And when our enemies are vanquished, we don't go around giving out chalva like the Arabs. We don't do that. What do? We rejoice over the fact that the evil that's spouting out of that person has stopped. At least the wickedness that they are pouring forth like a bad fountain is being quenched, is being quelled. That's stopped. But they themselves, it is if I want him to die, but I want his wickedness to stop. If the only way to stop his wickedness is to kill him, you've got to kill him. But I'm not killing because I want to kill him. I'm killing because I want him to stop acting like that. If necessary. So restrain his anger and be patient with the wicked is his godless. This is his gibor, this is his power. So Doniel took it away. Doniel struck the word gibor. He took it out. He said, how can you say Hashem's great when the Jews are being crushed? The answer is, how can you not say Hashem's great when he's holding back from just destroying Babylon?
So can't you say that these bad people, they are God's messenger?
But now, if they act like that, they're rewardable. If Moshe would have turned up to Pharaoh and said, listen, we've got a problem here. Pharaoh said, listen, Moshe, I know exactly what you mean. Avraham Avinu was told that your children, your descendants, are going to be workers in a strange land for 400 years. It's only been 200 years here. We've got 200 years left. What would you like me to do? I'm very happy to work with you. Tell me what Hashem would want from me. He'd go, Olam Haba. But if he wishes to cruelly and vindictively be wicked and cruel to Hashem's children to the point of crushing them to oblivion, which is what was good, Hashem's going to have to draw a line, so we have to come out earlier. But had he have been good about it, they'd have stayed there the full 400 years, wouldn't need the extra 190 that we're all paying off now, according to Kabbalah. And we'd done that, and he'd have got Olam Haba. And come and join us, convert. He said, listen, I really didn't mean anything bad to you, but what can I do? Kodesh Baruch Hu made a deal with Avraham Avinu. Avraham Avinu said this to him, and he said to him, sorry, they've got to go down to another nation. I picked the short straw. I didn't want to do it. I love Hashem. I want to serve him. But he's being mean to us. They're exactly right.
Yeah, but doesn't that mean then still that God doesn't love him? Can you say then he's still not loved? It's just that he's a necessary person to be there. He needs to be there.
Hashem is so great. He's so powerful. He's so beyond our way of seeing things. He gave Pharaoh so much. He allowed him to live despite the fact he was a firstborn. He saw Yamsuf drown all of his soldiers and he went and became king of Nineveh, which was a righteous king. Was he wicked? Yes. Did he need to be overthrown? Yes. Did the Jews need to be taken out? Yes. Did he love him? Yes. So much so when the Malachim wanted to sing Shir, which they got to do, Hashem said, I don't want to hear from you. I'm killing my creations. Who are his creations? The Mitzrim? These Rishayim? They're my children. I love them too. I love them too. Stop singing. But then the angel said, but the Jews are singing. The Jews are singing Shir. They're singing a song now. He goes, they've got to. I've just done a miracle on their behalf. They have to show me a Korsatov. They have to show me gratitude. It would be wrong of them not to. But them, they're dying. I don't need to hear from you. He was distressed that he was, at the end of the day, they're still God's creatures. has put time in at the end of Yonah, at the end of the 48th verse of Yonah. Does he not turn around and chide Yonah and say, yeah, you're giving me such a hard time. There's all these people that are done at the right from the left. I've labored for them. Should I not care for them? But these people are wicked. They're like, so don't worry, you need to destroy the city. But I love them. I've worked for them. I didn't create them for naught. They're not a mistake. They're a project of mine. That's his power. That's his power. Gibor is not lost. Put it back, said Anshe Kinesis Gadola to Daniel. You put that back. Yes, I can understand from the way you're seeing it, it should be deleted. But you're not seeing it the right way. God's awesomeness, his Naira, is revealed in the fact that one small nation can survive among 70 nations bent on their complete and utter destruction. How is that even possible? How is it possible we are here today? How is that actually possible? Every single one of us alive today, especially as Ashkenazim, have a miracle in our background that got us to be existent. How are you even breathing? You've had thousands of years of the most mechanized, powerful, warmongering evil bear down on us and try to kill us. And yeah, it's the Baruch Hashem flourishing. How's that working? That's Noah. That's Hashem's awesomeness. Put it back. Put it back, Jeremiah. Put it back. You've missed the point. Only the Anshe Knesset Gadolah can say that. They earned the accolade HaGdolah because they rinsed... Now, this is very, very important. Very, very important. Why were they called the Anshe Knesset HaGdolah? Why were they called great? This is the Gemara in Yuma, Samachtes. Because they reinstituted all of God's praises. The great, the mighty, and the awesome. They gave God back his crown. Why are they called Gadolah? Because they reinstituted Hashem's praises while prophets came along and took it away. They said, you're seeing this wrong. God is worthy of these praises. Nonetheless, the difficulty that we're facing, he's worthy of the praises in the power and the might that he shows. And therefore, this is an unbelievable thing. This should give us chizuk, this one line from the Gemara. The outcome of this Gemara. Anyone who recognizes God's true greatness and teaches it to others also deserve for themselves the accolade of great. The Anshe Knesset Gadolah came along and said, you think Hashem's not great and powerful and mighty? We're telling you he is, just because of the reasons you're saying he shouldn't be. So if you realize to anyone else, if you tell someone else, you're seeing this wrong, and Hashem really is powerful, you also earn the title Gadolah, just like they did. But we got a question. They're called Anshe Knesset HaGadolah. And of all words that they deleted and reinstituted, Godel ain't in it. Moshe Rabbeinu came along, right? And called him Godel, Gibor, Noira. Great, mighty, awesome. Are you with me on that? That was from Devarim. Along came Jeremiah, and he took out which word? He took out Godel. And then came Daniel, and he took out... He took out Gibor and Noira. Yirmiyahu took out Noira. He said Hashem is not awesome anymore because of the way they were reveling in the base of Mikdash. And Daniel took out the word Gibor. Hashem's not mighty anymore because the look of the people of Israel is so dejected that Hashem can't be seen as mighty. But they never took out the word Godel. So Godel was never up on the cards. What the Anshe Knesset HaGadolah reinstituted is the words Gibor and Noira. So why don't we call them the Anshe Knesset HaGavura or the Anshe Knesset HaNoira? Why Anshe Knesset HaGadolah, which is the word that nobody's arguing on that. So you can't say they reinstituted God's crown because he never lost Godless. Nobody ever said that. He just lost Noira and he lost Gibor. So if you're the people that come along and put the Gibor and the Noira back on his head, as it were, so let's be the Anshe Knesset HaGavura of HaNoira.
In the same way that God will remain all the time, so too.
Yeah, but they didn't do anything about it.
There's a subtlety in it.
So it says, perhaps, so the answer that's given is like this. Yirmiyahu and Daniel, in their generation, couldn't perceive God's strength or awe, respectively, due to their individual negative circumstances. In their desire to be absolutely truthful, they were prevented from expressing those attributes, so they deleted them. But the Anshe Knesset Gadolah existed at which festival time? Who was on the Anshe Knesset? What was one of the men? Purim. One of the men on the Anshe Knesset Gadolah was Mordechai. After the miracle of Purim, when God's infinite goodness towards the Jewish people were revealed, It was once again possible to reassess the situation, looking back in light of God's goodness. At Purim, when they realized we're really up for our next on the chopping block, Haman's really going to kill us. This is really touch and go here. And yet, at that time, Hashem saved us and we won out on the day. It was unbelievable. What a turnabout. But it was literally all down to the wire, like a Holocaust overnight. And yet, Joshua said, no, I'm going to stop that. Looking back how bad it was, then we look back at Jeremiah, then we look back at Adonai and said, you know what? Hashem really is mighty. Hashem really is awesome. We're going to put that back. Amazingly, in our exile is where God's strength and awesomeness are revealed. Because God uses the Gentile nations that oppress us to pay off our debts and ultimately bring our salvation. That's why we get such a longevity out of the world, because we're not paying off our debts in one go. We'll pay off piecemeal. The other nations, God lets build and build and build and build and build. When their measure is full, he knocks them out. USSR, Chaldeans, Russians, the Greeks, they come and they go, they just disappear. The Jews are always here, but they're always suffering a bit. Why? Because they're always paying off an interest bill. Always paying off a debt. But because they're always paying it off, you don't need to knock them on the head so hard. In which case, you can let them go for longer. That's God's Naira right there. On top of that, the wickedness of the nations as they persecute us causes them to lose their merit and leads to their own destruction in the very same foul blood. Remember what I said in Yom Suf? God redeems the Jews, knocks the wicked on the head. How does this work? He gives the Gentile nations the ability of free reign. In doing so, if they act wickedly, they're eating up their own credits so that he can destroy them at time. So with the very ability to hold back and let them go full blast in their wickedness, actually speeding up their own destruction in his own legal system. That's Naira. That's awesome. It was this added perception of Hashem's greatness and goodness as a result of that salvation that enabled them to once again perceive Hashem's strength, Gibor, and Or, Noira. They're therefore called the Anshei Knesset HaGadolah, the men of the Gadolah assembly, since Godel refers to the added appreciation of Hashem's attribute of Godless, which is his infinite goodness and kindness. We said at the beginning that Godel is Chesed. Overall, the most important thing we understand about HaKadosh Baruch Hu is his chesed. And we didn't really understand that greatness until we reassessed Gibor and Noira. Until we understood his power and his awesomeness, we didn't understand what a Baal Chesed he is. We didn't understand what a loving kindness spout of outcome he really is. Now that we've put back Gibor and Noira, now we can understand his godless. Therefore, we call them the Anshei Knesset HaGadolah, the men of the assembly that put back the godless so we can see Hashem's kindness. So when you're saying this, when you're coming through to saying this, HaKael, the Almighty, HaGodl, that's Chesed, HaGibor, the Restrainer, the Hanoira, the Awesomeness, the Anshei Knesset HaGadolah who wrote this, are getting their name from the Godl. Because without Gibor and Noira, you don't understand godless. You don't understand Chesed without restraint. You don't understand what it's like to get a prize unless you don't get it, unless you've earned it. If you've worked hard for a prize and suddenly you get a sticker in the book, it's like, oh, that's because you didn't get a sticker in the book because you didn't work hard enough previously. You never understood what it really meant to get chesed. So we need Godel and Gibor to hold back, to show you that what it means, and Naira to express it, so you really understand the chesed. So the godless is what they put back. Anshei Knesset HaGadolah. And that's the reason why the Anshei Knesset HaGadolah are called the men of the great assembly, not the men of the strong assembly or the men of the awesome assembly. It's because the strength and the awesomeness leads to the concept of greatness. That's just, I mean, who knew? Who knew? Who knew? There is a Gemara Shabbos on page Kuf Lamed Gimel, Amud Base 133b, that has a saying that I think we all know in our common vernacular. Have doima loy, emulate. The greatest possible compliment and praise that you can give is imitation. It's a Gemara in Shabbos. If you really think something's good, copy it. right? Imitation, like if I play guitar or something like that and someone copies my licks or something like that. It's like, why are you doing that? Because it's good, right? The highest form of praise is I like it, so I'm going to do it too. You know what I mean? Or I copy someone else's because I think it's good. It's the same thing. I want to copy that because I know it's good. When we recount the praises of Hashem, we must resolve to follow his example. Have Domele, go be like him. God is Gibor, he's mighty, but he's not brutal and he's not vindictive. He's not full of malice. When we say mighty, often we think of maybe a dictator who feed. I mean, this Kim Jong-un in North Korea, they say that if anyone goes against him, he'll feed them live to dogs. That's just something he does. And he watches and enjoys it.
That's James Bond.
That's a brutal, vindictive outcome, right? That's mean. That's mean. But he's powerful. If you're in his domain, that would scare you, would it not? But Hashem is not brutal and he's not vindictive. What's his gibor? What's his strength? Listen to this. This is what the Gemara says. Unbelievable. His strength of patience and perseverance. God is extremely long-suffering. He puts up with a lot of rubbish we give him. Over and over again. Every Yom Kippur, you should feel that again. That's his strength. His strength is his patience and perseverance. The men of the Great Assembly earned their title not merely for their insight into God's attributes. They were called great because they emulated God's behaviour. When we recite the bracha, this bracha here, we should have in mind to practice self-control. We won't act or speak upon impulse, nor allow ourselves to be overwhelmed by anger, which is something Hashem doesn't do. He gets angry, but he's not overwhelmed by it. And we then fulfill an essential purpose of prayer, which is what? For halachta bidrochav, to follow in his ways. It says in Devarim, Lamed Ches, Test 28:9, I want to emulate him. When we say these words, hakel, hagodl, hagibor, v'anoira, you know what? I've also got to do that. I've got to be godl. I've got to do chesed. I've got to be gibor. I've got to be powerful and mighty. How? Hold your tongue. Restrain your anger and your ferocity. That's not easy. But that's what Hashem does. That's how I can copy him. I can get that gibor too. For Hanoira, I can be awesome by putting a balance in between my chesed and my gevurah. By acting with loving kindness and yet not overdoing it. Getting the right balance. That's what I'm telling myself to do. That's what I should have in mind. You, the Almighty, you can do this. I am going to emulate you. The best praise I can give you is to copy you. How am I going to do that? I'm also going to be great, mighty, and awesome. I'm going to control myself, just like you. You can control yourself more than anyone else can. The more I can do that, the more I'm giving you praise. There is a word of caution, of course. When we recite this list of God's attributes, we must bear in mind that it's impossible to adequately actually describe God. Don't think you've got the definitive list. Oh, well, we've summed God up then. He's God or Gibor, no. Well, that's good. You know, let's get on with something else. There's a Gemara in Brochus with a story in Lamed Gimel Amud Beis 33b. It says, one day Rabbi Chanina overheard someone davening. They were davening out loud. And he was saying, Hakel HaGodol HaGibor, as he's meant to, as we're accustomed to. But then he added other words. He said, the great, the mighty, the awesome. Then he chucked in the brave, the bold, the true, the fearsome, the strong, the sure, the esteemed. So he said, I'm going to just listen to the whole thing. Just listen to the guy. After he finished, he walked up to him. And he said, are you attempting to list all the praises of Hashem? So the man said, yeah, I'm going to go for it. He says, are those all the adjectives you can think of? Are you done? Do you have a dictionary with you? He said, no, I just first thing that came to my head, you know. He said, if Moshe Rabbeinu hadn't to use the words Kel Godel Gibor Vanora himself, then the Anshei Knesset Gadolah would never have dared dream those words. It's because we had it in a pasuk in Devarim, Parshas Akiv. But you come along and you start adding on to what the Torah is saying. Bel Tosef, you're adding on. That's a thing you can't just add on. He said, let me tell you a parable. There's a very wealthy king. He possessed millions of gold and silver pieces. If one were to say that he has hundreds of silver pieces, not only would the king not feel complimented, you're insulting him. It's a disgrace to say he owned less than he does. When you're praising Hashem by attempting to mention all of his praises, you're doomed to fall short. Wherever you step, you're going to miss out something that you should have said. So all we can go is on the cable laying. Remember we talked about that the Avos laid the cables. They literally put down, you know, the telephone wires and we pick up the phones and we use them. Let's just stick with what the Torah has given us. Because once you start adding in, now you can do that if you want at the end, before you take 3 footsteps back. But in the actual tefillah itself, you follow suit. There's reasons for these words. There's reasons why the Anshei Knesset Gedolah stitched these Dafka words together out of the Pasuk, as we're going to Be'ez Hashem see. Because the next word which says, frankly, all of the praises we've got are ridiculous. There's nothing we can say, is Kael Elyon. The supreme, most high being. The Siach Yitzchak explains, the word Elyon, supreme, means that God is so exalted, on top of the word Kael, he's just so exalted that he's totally beyond the comprehension of even the holiest angels. Even they say in Kedusha, Ayei Makam Kavodoi, where is the place of his glory? They don't know where he is either. We can only understand him superficially by studying how he treats his creations, such as the fact that he bestows tremendous loving kindness. He himself is inscrutable. You don't know why he does stuff. He doesn't do stuff because you do stuff. He doesn't have your problems. He doesn't have your issues. He doesn't have your limitations. He's totally different to us. He isn't bound by physicality. So much so, on this point, there's a Medrash on Keheles Rabba, the Medrash Rabba on Keheles, in Dalet Yud Ches 4:18, and it says as follows, a very interesting idea. When a weaker force occupies a strategic high position, it can conquer a much mightier army than that below it. In modern military terminology, this is called a force multiplier. A force multiplier. I don't have as much strength as my enemy, but I can do stuff strategically to give myself more strength than my enemy. One way is to occupy a high ground. If your enemy's coming through a valley and you're at the top of the valley, you're on the mountain ground, and you shoot down, you have a tremendous advantage over the people in the valley. Certainly the upper force will be mightier. So he says, the Medrash Rabba says, God is the mightiest force occupying the top position, the most strategic position, and frail man is below. The Almighty will always prevail. What's it talking about? So the Michtav Meliyahu, Rabbi Dessler, says in volume 3, page 82, he says, let's pretend there's hundreds of thousands of mighty soldiers, all heavily armed with spit. Now, he lived in Gateshead for a time after the war, Rav Dessler. Okay? He was a relatively modern, you'll see what he's going to say here. There's hundreds of thousands of mighty soldiers, bows and arrows and spears, and they're on chariots, and they're ready to go, right? There's an invasion, they're going to come into a city, and right above them is a modern jet fighter with strategic bombing, like laser-guided bombs. And he drops, but this is Mikhtabliyo, he drops bombs on the army. This is a very strong, battle-savvy army. He says, the jet is in a totally separate class of its own. You cannot compare one lone jet fighter with, like, paveway laser-guided missiles with 1,000 people with spears and bows and arrows. It's totally beyond the comprehension of those forces. Like, how's he doing that? This is where Kel Elyon comes in. This title appears first with Malchei Tzedek, the king of Shalem, when the Torah describes him as Kohen LeKel Elyon, the priest to the most supreme God. This is in Bereishis. It's Parshas Lech Lecha, and it's after Avraham saves Lot after battling with the kings. So he has to battle with the kings, beat the kings, and then get Lot out of hostage situation, right? That's the story in the Torah that goes on with that. I'll just read you what happened. It says, so I'm reading now from Genesis 14:17. The king of Sodom went out to meet him after his return from defeating Kedorlaomer and the kings that were with him to the valley of Shaveh, which is the king's valley. But Malchei Tzedek, king of Shalem, brought out bread and wine. He was a priest of God, Kael Elyon, the Most High. And Melchizedek blessed Avraham, saying, blessed, now his name back then was Avraham, not Avraham. He hadn't yet had the name change. So he said, blessed is Avram of God, the Most High. So Melchizedek said that. Maker of heaven and earth. And blessed be God, the Most High, Kel Elyon, who has delivered your foes into your hand. And he gave him, Avram gave him a tenth of everything. He's like a Cohen, he's going to give him Misa. Gave him a tenth of everything. Unbelievable situation. The king of Sodom then said, look, you know, let me give you all the money. And Avram said, no, I don't want any of your money. I'm not going to take a strap of your shoes or a thread of your garments. From the strap of the shoes came the tefillin. And the thread of the garments came the tzitzis. He says, I didn't want you, far be it from you to make Avram rich. I don't want anything from you. Just let me take the people and go. I just want to take light and go. This Melchizedek business, what's going on? He expressed his admiration and gratitude to Avraham for defeating the four kings who threatened his country. Very nice. As the first said, he blessed him, saying, blessed be Abram, the God of Most High, master of heaven and earth. And then blessed be the supreme God himself, who's delivered your foes into your hand. Have you noticed a problem with that? Yeah, for goodness sake. Chazal take note of the fact that Melchizedek first blessed Avram to credit him for the victory, and afterwards, in the next verse, thanked and blessed God. The Gemara in Nedarim, Lamed Beis Omed Beis, 32b, says Rav Zecharia brings in the name of Rav Yishmael. Hashem intended to bring forth the priesthood from Shame, who was Shame, right? Shame was Melchizedek. Shame was Melchizedek. But because Melchizedek blessed Avraham before he blessed God, God said, no, you are not going to be a priest. That's not what priests do. They don't make that kind of mistake. I'm going to bring it forth from Avraham instead. Avraham himself even reprimanded Melchizedek, saying, does a servant's blessing precede his master's? You should bless Hashem before me. God then gave the priesthood to Avraham. So the verse then reads, and he was a priest of God the Most High. Only Melchizedek was a priest, but not his descendants. This offers a great insight into the next segment. Kel Elyon, who recalls the kindness of the patriarchs and brings a redeemer to their children's children for his name's sake. God created the universe for his name's sake. Why? This is key. So that mankind should know that he is supreme and that his name should be foremost in their minds and lips. Melchizedek failed that. He was too busy looking at man and not God. And that's why he couldn't transmit that legacy to his descendants. The patriarchs who made Hashem supreme in their life merited that their legacy and blessing continue in an unbroken chain in us. Now remember, when you say that Hashem is going to send a redeemer to their children's children, he's talking about you. You are the outcome of this. Now already in this bracha, and we'll see in the next bracha, in Gevuras, Hashem is already sowing seeds of the Messiah in our first brachas. In the first bracha, we talk about he's going to send a redeemer to their children's children. And then in the next bracha, he's already talking about Umatzmiach Yeshua. He's already making salvation sprout. In the first brachas of the Shemona Esrei, we're never forgetting the fact that Mashiach is around the corner. Unbelievable idea. But in order to get to that concept, you have to restrain yourself and act with kindness and not be brutal and vindictive. If you refine yourself to those levels, it's not God telling you that he is God, he's Kel Elyon. It's you that have come to recognize it yourself. One of the best ways of doing that is by reading the words of this bracha and understanding what it means. If you get to that level of perception, it's only right that God should redeem you. What we're going to talk about next time about Ezra Hashem is this concept of Goimel Chasad and Tovim for Kainei Hakol, whose beneficial kindness he creates on everything. And he created everything so that he might bestow kindness upon it, using everything in creation as a tool. Why is that vital for us to know? And how does that fit with the thing that we've just said? And how's that linking to the fact that Hashem is going to redeem us based upon that? And that is going to be a secret that's going to be revealed by the prophet Micha in the 7th chapter, where he's going to give us a deep answer as to what's going with loving kindness and redemption. And I look forward to carrying on with you next time. Thank you so much for taking out your time.